Picture this. You're at 7,500 feet, about 40 miles from your destination. The engine note changes. It's subtle at first, just a slight roughness. Not a stutter, not a bang, just different. You check the mixture, check the carb heat, scan your oil pressure and temperature. Everything looks normal on the gauges. Maybe it was nothing. You press on 5 minutes later. It happens again. A little more pronounced this time, and now that voice in the back of your head is asking a question you're not sure you want to answer. Do you declare an emergency? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, and this is Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about the two words that can save your life and the psychological weight that keeps too many pilots from saying them. Before we get into it, a quick word for AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for pilots at every step of the journey. First solo, private, instrument, commercial, all of it. Great way to mark the milestones that actually matter. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Alright, emergency declarations, the Mayday call. Or more commonly in general aviation, just telling a controller you're declaring an emergency. Four syllables that a lot of pilots treat like some kind of nuclear option. I want to talk about why that is, because it's killing people. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The Federal Aviation Administration does not penalize pilots for declaring emergencies in good faith. That's not a rumor, that's the regulatory reality. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.3 gives the pilot in command the authority to deviate from any rule to meet an emergency, and the same regulation says that if the FAA asks for a written report afterward, you submit one. That's it. That is the full consequence of a good faith declaration. A written report, no certificate action, no fine, no suspension. Not for a pilot who made a reasonable call based on what they knew at the time. So here's the question nobody asks in ground school. If the penalty for declaring is essentially zero, why do pilots die waiting to declare? The answer is ego, and I say that without judgment because I've felt that pull myself. There's a voice that lives in a lot of cockpits. It sounds like this. It's probably nothing. I don't want to tie up the frequency. If I declare and it turns out to be fine, I'm going to look like an idiot. Maybe I should just see how it goes for another few miles. That voice has a name in the accident reports. We call it normalization of deviation, press-onitis, the plan that won't let go, but underneath all the labels, it's the same thing. A pilot prioritizing perception over safety. Let me take you back to our scenario. 7,500 feet, 40 miles out. Engine roughness, twice now. Gauges reading normal. What do you actually do? The Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, want you to think in terms of risk management, not just what's happening right now, but with an honest eye toward the next 10 minutes. The next 20 minutes, is the situation stable? Is it trending worse? Here's the scenario-based thinking that separates pilots who walk away from ones who don't. First question, is this getting better, getting worse, or staying the same? Engine roughness that happened once and then vanished completely looks one way. Engine roughness that's happened twice in 5 minutes and seems to be building looks very different. Trend matters more than current state. Second question, what's my margin? At 40 miles out with altitude under you and open terrain below, you have options, glide distance, alternate airports, time to think. That margin will only shrink as you get lower, as the fuel burns off, as the situation potentially degrades further. Margin is the most valuable thing you have in an emergency. Spend it on making good decisions, not on waiting to see what happens. Third question. What do I actually lose by calling now? This is the one I want you to sit with, because the honest answer is almost nothing. You contact approach or center. You say you're declaring an emergency, experiencing engine roughness, requesting priority handling. What happens next is that ATC clears the frequency around you. They start coordinating with the nearest suitable airport. They get the runway ready. They get eyes on you. If you need anything, they're already working on it. And then you land. Mechanic pops the cowling, finds a fouled plug or a loose ignition wire, fixes it in half an hour. What happens to you? If the FAA wants a written report, you write a paragraph explaining what happened. Story over. But here's what happens if you wait. If you sit on it until the situation is so far degraded that you're out of good options, you're declaring under pressure instead of declaring with margin. And humans making decisions under extreme stress make worse choices than humans who still have room to breathe. Declare early, declare with margin. Give ATC the information they need to help you before you're past the point where help is easy. Let me give you another scenario, because this works best when it's concrete. You're flying across country in a Cessna 172. Visual flight rules, fuel stop halfway. You did the math before departure, comfortable reserves. But the winds aloft were different from the forecast. You've been burning fuel faster than planned, fighting a headwind the briefing didn't fully capture. You're approaching your fuel stop now, but the gauges, which you know are approximate in a 172, are reading lower than your calculations said they should. You'd planned on landing with 45 minutes of reserve fuel. Now you're honestly not certain. Do you declare? Most pilots in this situation don't. They land, fill up, and shake their head at the wind, and most of the time they're fine. But some of them aren't, and the ones who aren't tend to have a second variable they didn't see coming. The fuel stop field has a NOTAM closing the primary runway, or the pattern is busy and they get sequenced long. Or there's a conflict with a practice approach aircraft, and they're told to extend their downwind, and now they're low on fuel. The situation is fluid, they're stressed, and they're still trying to manage it without saying a word. Here's what I teach. If you're genuinely uncertain about your fuel state, that is an emergency adjacent situation. Not necessarily a full mayday, 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 but a quiet call to approach that sounds like I'm running lower on fuel than planned, requesting priority sequencing to the field. That call is appropriate. That call is legal. And that call might be the thing that gets you down with 15 minutes of reserve instead of 2. Let's do one more, because I want to hit a scenario that catches people off guard. You're flying with a passenger, spouse, friend, parent, doesn't matter. An hour into the flight, they mention they're not feeling well. Maybe their color isn't right. Maybe they say something about chest discomfort. Your job in that moment is to act as pilot in command, not as a concerned friend, not as someone trying to diagnose what's wrong. The same three questions apply. Is this getting better or worse? What's my margin? What do I lose by calling now? If someone in your airplane is showing signs of a medical problem, you have every right to declare, divert to the nearest suitable airport, and get them help. You do not owe anyone a medical diagnosis before you act. You don't need to know whether it's a panic attack or a cardiac event. You make the call, you land, you get help. I've had students genuinely worried that declaring will get them in trouble if it turns out the passenger just needed a glass of water and some fresh air. It won't. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.3 is explicit on this. The pilot in command is the final authority in an emergency. That authority includes deviating from any regulation necessary to meet it. Use that authority. It exists for exactly this reason. Now let's talk about the actual mechanics, because some pilots hesitate partly because they're not sure what to say. If you're already in contact with ATC, the call is your call sign. The words declaring an emergency, the nature of the problem, your position, your altitude, souls on board, and fuel remaining. ATC will help you fill in gaps. They are trained for this. You don't need to sound composed. You need to get the key information out. If you're not in contact with ATC, you switch to 121.5 MHz, the emergency frequency. That frequency is monitored 24 hours a day by ATC facilities and many aircraft. You say Mayday three times. Then your aircraft type, your call sign, the nature of the emergency, your position, and what you need. While you're talking, consider squawking 700 on your transponder. That's the emergency squawk code. 4 digits, 7700. It paints a distinctive symbol on radar scopes and gets attention even before anyone hears your voice. Set the transponder, make the call. A complete transmission might sound like this. Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. Cessna 172, November 12345, engine roughness, 20 miles east of Riverside, 7,500 feet, two souls on board, 1 hour fuel, requesting vectors to nearest airport. That's about 15 seconds. You can do that under stress. Now here's what I want you to actually do before your next flight. Not something complicated or time-consuming, just a 30-second mental brief during your run-up or on the taxi out. Ask yourself one question. Under what conditions would I declare an emergency today? If you can't answer that clearly before you leave the ground, you will not answer it clearly in the cockpit with something going wrong and the clock running. The moment an emergency begins is exactly the wrong time to be working out your personal minimums for declaring one brief it before you fly. Sound like this in your head. If that engine starts running rough and doesn't clear up within 2 minutes, I'm calling it. If my fuel reaches below my reserve plus 20 minutes to the destination, I'm declaring low fuel. If my passenger shows anything that looks like a medical problem, I'm diverting immediately. Specifics. Thresholds. Conditions you can recognize in the moment. The ACS talks about aeronautical decision-making, risk management, and single-pilot resource management. Those aren't abstract concepts you demonstrate once for an examiner and then forget. They are the framework for exactly these moments. The examiner on your practical test is looking for a pilot who recognizes when a situation is evolving, makes a decision while options still exist, and acts without waiting for the situation to make the decision for them. Declaring an emergency is that action. It's not weakness. It's not failure. It's a trained pilot using every resource available, including ATC priority handling, including emergency services, including the infrastructure the system built specifically for this. The pilots who declare early land safely, the ones who wait until they have no margin left, sometimes don't get that outcome. That's the habit. Brief your declare conditions before every flight. It costs you 30 seconds on the ground, and it might be the 30 seconds that matters most. This segment drew from the Aeronautical Information Manual, FAR Part 91, and the AOPA Air Safety Institute's Accident Case Studies, more at radiohangar.com. See you next time.